This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Feminism in your ears. It's another broad podcast on Joy 94.9. Keep listening. Hashtag feminism. Hashtag podcast. Hashtag broad on Joy 94.9.
He called Goldman Sachs a vampire squid stuck to the face of humanity sucking out money. And I was like, that is a visual metaphor. And someone ought to make that explicit. And so I did.
Bombastic, audacious, revolutionary, rash, outraged, organized, assertive, activist, days,
broad,
on Joy 94.9.
To welcome you to Broad, Molly Crabapple. It's great to have you here. You're at the ACMI as part of the Melbourne Writers Festival, and it's your first time here in Melbourne, so welcome.
Thank you. I love it here.
Now, it's a big one for you. It's your launch of your book as well, your memoir, Drawing Blood. Can you tell us a bit about that? And
oh dear, it's always the worst for writers to describe their books, because we're basically twitchy, introverted weirdos. That's why we are reduced to writing in the first place. So I'm going to do my best here, but you'll forgive me. It's a memoir about becoming an artist in New York City, and that's New York from 9/11 through the depraved financial boom years to Occupy Wall Street. It's a story about working and hustling and scraping by in New York, working in the naked girl industry, and eventually being lucky enough to get to find myself and find a place for myself there.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal when you look at the work that you have been doing, involved in, and I think Occupy has been one of the biggest ones. For those who don't know, what happened there in a nutshell, and how did you get involved?
Occupy happened 5 years ago in New York City, and it was worldwide protest against financial inequality, against abuse by the police, against the corruption that money has been enacting in politics. It also happened down the street from where I live. I was very, very privileged to get to spend a lot of time both documenting Occupy and doing posters for it. And since then, I've been able to use those techniques as an artist, and also to write as a journalist about places around the world, from Gaza to Syrian refugee crisis, to migrant workers in Abu Dhabi, to the American prison system.
Mm. Yeah, all of these things are real touchstones, I think, the last 5 to 6 years now. And you've been a key one of the artists that have been part of it and following it, but also helping to create, I think, a lot of the images that we see. Just looking through your work, huge body of work, from the drawings to the paintings to the murals, and now, you know, you're in the Museum of Modern Art, has a permanent collection there. What was that like?
It's funny. You know, people think like, oh my God, you're a millionaire or whatever. Actually, the Museum of Modern Art got my piece from someone else, and I didn't even know I was in it until they emailed me and they were like, yo, what's the caption info for this? I was like, dear, well then. It's cool. I mean, to be honest, it means a lot more to me, like, when I see my art on a protest sign, or when I see my art we paste on the street, though it certainly is a cool credential. It makes my mom proud. It makes my mom think I made good.
Yeah. And also, you've been called, like, your work or caricatures, would you call them that? Satire, even, when you're looking at more of a political side of things. It seems to carry a tradition which is very original and very American. Do you feel that you're part of that history now, living history?
Well, it's actually a worldwide tradition of artists documenting events, documenting history as it happens. I am so inspired, for instance, by Goya's Disasters of War, but also by Chitta Prasad, who's an amazing Indian artist who chronicled the Bengal famine. And his works were actually banned by the British, and his collections of his prints that he published were burned by the British, because he was criticizing a man-made famine, and they said that he was hurting the war effort. I'm very inspired by Otto Dix, who is a painter, I mean, first of, like, Weimar Berlin, but also of, like, trench warfare, because he was a conscript in that army. I think that there... I mean, we're artists, right? We have our sketch pen. We want to chronicle the world around us, and when history is happening around us, we want to chronicle that, just like we want to chronicle a night out with friends, or just like we want to chronicle our lover. And I find that tradition so rich and so global, and it's something that I very am deeply inspired by.
Yeah, I mean, thinking of the work of Otto Dix and that, it blows everything apart. And at the same time, when you look at little parts of what he's doing as a snapshot, way before the camera came along and way before cinema, pretty much.
Yeah, he was able to capture a truth in the experience of World War I or the experience of Weimar Berlin that the photos of that period, they can grasp at, but I think that he captured something deeper. I mean, one of his big paintings, Metropolis, on the margin are these veterans who had lost their limbs in World War I, mm-hmm. and they're begging on the street. And then in the center is, like, the glossy cabaret, and the women are, like, fucking beautiful, rapacious monsters. Like, they could consume the world between these, like, between their painted lips. And it's, like the splendor and the horror and the grasping all at once, all in this one piece. And I don't know how any photograph could get that, because it's all the moments mashed together,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's incredible. It's almost like you can see it moving and animated. And similar with your work, you use a lot of those organic sort of forms. And where did the vampire squid, the octopus,
it comes from a writer who I love and whose book I later illustrated. It was Matt Taibbi. He's an amazing American journalist.
Yeah.
And just, like, one of the sharpest voices for talking about, like, the bullshit American political establishment, or about political corruption, about the financial crisis. I mean, his pen is like a rapier. He is so good. And he called Goldman Sachs a vampire squid stuck to the face of humanity sucking out money. And I was like, that is a visual metaphor. And someone ought to make that explicit. And so I did.
You did, yeah. It's powerful. And there's a lot of good artists from that period, which we still are experiencing, well, at least in the United States, and of course with Black Lives Matter. How is that environment-wise? What is happening over there?
I mean,
your experience.
I have such admiration for Black Lives Matter, and I'm so excited that at Festival of Dangerous Ideas, Elisa Garza is going to be speaking there. She's one of the founders of Black Lives Matter. I mean, this is a movement that started by two queer women of color that has, like, shaken the political establishment of America, that has forced, like, presidential candidates, forced the president to address it, that has deeply challenged, you know, really many institutions of white supremacy there, and that spread around the world. I don't know if it's hit Australia, but in London there were Black Lives.
It has. In a park called Kalgoorlie, there was a young black Aboriginal boy who was killed, and the police, there's some sort of strange involvement. It was a hit and run, something's going on, and they're rioting at the moment. So there's a real breakdown of authority and a real breakdown to the bare bones, and they've been putting placards up saying Black Lives Matter, so Black Lives Matter here as well. So yeah, it's had a massive impact, and I think it's just starting to kick off over here too.
That's
interesting and important.
I mean, that's amazing, that sort of international solidarity and inspiration. And yeah, I have such admiration. When Ferguson first happened, I have to admit, I was looking at it and I was like, man, it felt like Occupy was children's dress rehearsal compared to what people are doing here and what people are risking here.
You've been to Ferguson as well?
I haven't been to Ferguson,
okay.
No. I did some sort of journalist, or some projects about it. I did an animation about it. A lot of my friends either covered Ferguson or, you know, even went to Ferguson as activists, but I didn't have the chance, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Though I did participate in protests in New York about, you know, the killing of Eric Garner.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, a lot of the names of all of these places are now, you know, going to be ingrained in that. Now we've got Baton Rouge and I believe St. Louis and so on and so on. It seems to be following the global warming as well, with the floods and everything, the chaos after 2008, pretty much after the big recession there. So we sort of watch down here in anticipation and also in fear, I suppose, of what's going to happen with Trump and Clinton. What are your thoughts about the upcoming election? You can say whatever you like.
Oh, God. There's so much to say.
Yeah.
I want to start by saying that obviously Trump is Tangerine Mussolini, and I feel like the more words I spend on condemning that horrible little man, the more I'm like, it's already been said. What am I going to say? Yeah. That he's like, that he's racist fascist. I mean, yeah, obviously. Mm. I also have to say though that Clinton is such a profoundly weak and corrupt candidate, and I think that any other candidate that was even halfway decent would have already wiped the floor with him. I think that the Democrats did a huge, huge disservice to at least the half their party that voted, you know, for Bernie, mm-hmm. by tacking so hard to the right, by continuing to be so emphatically pro corporation. And I think that there's a lack of realization that the old sort of neoliberal world order is not something that many people around the world are interested in anymore. And unfortunately, I see right-wing parties more than left-wing parties benefiting from that, and right-wing extremists like Trump benefiting from that. And a party like the Democrats needs to also deal with that. It has to stop pretending that it's still before 2008, that it's still before the financial crisis. Or else I really fear that even if Trump is beaten in this election cycle, the Republicans will unleash a candidate that's just as fascist but slightly less ludicrous, and then maybe that will win next time.
Yeah, it's very similar to, I guess, the politics here. We have a similar thing where every time there's an election, you know, we have them every 4 years, of course, and it moves more to the right. The left moves more to the right from the centre, and then more to the right, and more to the right. I'm thinking, at this rate, we'll be, you know, getting whiplash because we'll keep moving to the right. Do you feel that there'll be a time when something will happen that will challenge that completely? And hey,
I mean, one lives in hope. I was so honestly surprised at how many people in America did vote for Bernie, at how many people rallied for him.
Yeah, it was big.
It was a real upset and a real challenge. And you know, we live in hope that that sort of thing can and will happen again, because I think it needs to. Otherwise, it's just going to be these fucking right-wing racist populists that are scooping up that disaffected vote.
Mm. And he's such a gracious man with such a, obviously, a passion for the politics, for his country.
It's so rare that you see someone genuinely decent who actually believes what he says. and yeah, I know, you're just like, wow, you were a socialist then, you're a socialist now, you've stayed a socialist in and out of fashion. Yeah. You have responded with dignity and honesty and good faith, and you are just way better, probably, than our terrible system deserves.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's a... wrong for me to say, I guess, a good thing, but it would have been, I guess, a great disappointment if he had become tainted by the politics he would have been involved in, I guess. So it's just like we see that in some cases with Obama, of course. Different topic, but no, different subject. But I do want to sort of focus, as we're running out of time, of course, on yourself as a woman and the art that you do. And if that's okay by you, talking about feminism, and does that play a part in what you do?
I mean, obviously I'm a feminist. I tend to subscribe to the Gloria Steinem definition, which is that it's the revolutionary idea that women are equal human beings. How that plays out with my relationship to other people who identify as feminists, that's a different thing, of course. You know, there's a huge amount of disagreement and debate. But for me, my feminism comes from the belief that no one should be restricted, no one should be marginalized, no one should be trivialized, no one should be made simple, no one should be locked in a cage or even put up on a pedestal because they're a woman, because we're humans, and humans have the right to equality and freedom, and also humans exhibit the full diversity, good and bad, of characteristics, men and women.
Because we're a feminist show for Broad, is there something that could say to an Australian woman, I know you haven't been here very long, but there has been in recent times in our own backyard here a lot of really intense issues about, particularly about domestic violence. Just for our small population, we have one of the highest rates of women being murdered by men that they know, by people they know. It's a real problem. This year alone, 46 women just in being murdered by their partners. I know this is a bit heavy for this time in the morning, but yes, where do you think, or what do you think might be a good message or an answer to those women?
I mean,
escaping from...
Who are escaping from domestic violence. The people who... I mean, it's very hard for me to say. I don't do any work about domestic violence at all.
Oh, okay.
Not that I don't think it's a very important
yes.
issue. I just...
Yeah.
Well, of course, I've had, you know, friends and loved ones who have been victims of it. I haven't done any professional work on it at all. So it's difficult for me to give an intelligent message, you know, in terms of, like, policy proposals. But if I was going to give a message to people as humans, that's a very different thing. And I would say that you should never let anyone, not a lover, not a husband, not a parent, not a sibling, you should never let anyone steal from you the sense of your own value and your own dignity. And I should also say that the most valuable thing we have, one of them, is a community that loves us and that nourishes us and that has our back. And that if you have a friend that's going through this, It's not just about you know, telling them that they don't deserve this horrifying shit, though that's also a very important thing. But it's also about having their back in practical ways, you know, giving them alternatives to leave that.
Well, thank you. It's just that it is something that's come up a lot in our show, and we've had people talk about their experiences, and it seems to be one of the bigger things here. We've had what we call a Royal Commission, which is exploring and basically tabling every person's experience who wants to come forward, and it's going to be, I think, groundbreaking here, and I'm hoping that perhaps in other parts of the world too.
And I know that one thing is that very often domestic violence is tied in with economics. Often abusers try to take away a woman's means of financial support. Even if she's working a job, they try to take her money. And one thing that I think countries can do, in addition to you know, other things, but something that is seldom spoken about, is by providing people with enough right to a basic income, that they can leave an abuser who might have prevented them from being financially independent or might have stolen all of their things, and that they won't be financially destroyed, and that they'll still be able to feed their kids and feed themselves.
Are you reading any books of any of these Melbourne writers that you've bumped into? Have any of them jumped out if you had time?
Oh, God. Yeah. So Melbourne keeps... yesterday I did three speeches and one radio interview, and the day before I did several interviews, I think, and one speech, and then I flew in and I did a speech. So I haven't actually had that much time, and I have to admit I've been going through my massive pile of books. But I really love the writer Omar Musa. He's a friend of mine. He's a rapper who did a book called Here Come the Dogs, and I think he is just a vivid...
You recommend that one?
Yeah, I recommend that one. I think he's just like a vivid, lacerating, brilliant, like witty, cool dude and good writer. So I'd say that he's the Australian writer I'm currently reading right now.
Oh, great. Cool. When you get time.
Yeah, when I get time.
Well, Drawing Blood looks fantastic, and I can just only... you know, definitely recommend that people check it out and search it out if they don't get a chance to see you, obviously, today. In a very short period of time, you'll be on stage talking to more Australians about your work. But congratulations, it's a fabulous book, and it's a fabulous work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Molly Crabapple, and you are listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
That's beautiful. Thank you very much. We're a community radio station, so we're all crazy volunteers.
Cool. And I'm sorry I didn't have anything smarter to say on domestic violence.
No, I just threw that at you. I shouldn't have, really. But I just thought, just with the passion of your work and, you know, it's something I think...
It's just, you know how it is.
You do have women in your work a lot, and it's very important to you. So.
No, of course. It's just, it's one of those things, like, we can all only have so many topics of expertise.
Yeah, I know. I know. You've only got so much time.
So it was lovely. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Good to meet you.
Take a ride with a brother. Follow me down the steps of my heart. Follow me, let us guide one another. We'll never be apart, and until we hit the peak, we could be each other's keepers. In the ports and the blocks and the beaches, see the flocks of the lost and the speechless. See the minarets built from the need to be loved. I will show you all my secrets. There are marksmen at markets, bodies in a casket, sinning in a soul. There are pastures, bet that, hidden in the folds, linen made of gold. There is shimmering coal, there is darkness. Been penning my name in a wet cement, been selling my name to the wretched men, been telling enemies and my best of friends. I've been trying to figure out what I represent. Me. I was chained to the bottle, took a joyride and I pushed full throttle. Let me welcome you to my world. The caps, the cabs, the poetry and fly girls. There is something I should mention. The poems in my heart felt something like a sentence. Caged in, bloodstained bars of detention. But far beneath my pain was something like redemption. I saw a lake full of ink, carried off flying on a sphinx. Wear a cumulus storm cloud as I'm in co-chain lightning in my QBN links. Dined out of satellite dishes. Every lyric was a product of a vision and a trance. I was living with an ancestor's wish. Dance with the spirit till the very last kiss. Last minute, my time to kill it. Turn on a pivot and I shoot like Lilith. When the shot clock's down to one, raise up and I shoot the sun.
You've been listening to a broadcast on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.